to in order of testimony, because one of our witnesses, namely Barbara Seymour, has another meeting that she has to make, and so Fred, if you don't mind, I'll let her go ahead and testify, and then I'll come back to you so that she can make her other meeting, because I think it's 7:30 or something like that. You have to be there. Well, as one of the principal sponsors, would you like to...
Mr. Chairman, this will just take a minute. I thought it would be helpful if we could briefly tell you how this bill came about. And, during the last session of the legislature, a resolution was passed which answered some of the complaints and concerns that legislators have had about the increasing cost of publications in the state. And the bill was referred, or the bill was passed, and then it was referred to the Legislative Administration Committee for Action. Senator Carson was a member of that committee. And then President Burns and Speaker Smith appointed Senator Ivers and myself to be project directors for a study and investigation of this problem. We conducted a study for 18 months. It was our hope that the project director would be here tonight, or one of the gentlemen that did a lot of the research, and that possibly Bill Rye. And Bill comes to you then in response to the report that the committee wrote and submitted to the legislature. So that's about where we are. And as far as language in the bill and so on, we're certainly open for suggestions. In our answer to some of these questions and so on that came up during the last session, I think several sessions of that.
All right, then Barbara, we'll call on you and then let you give your testimony so you can make your other meeting.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm B.J. Seymour of the Department of Environmental Quality. I too am concerned about high cost reports, and I think our department has probably one of the least expensive reports extant. This is our annual report. It costs roughly 10 cents a copy, give or take a fraction of a cent. It doesn't take an envelope because it folds over like this and glues down, and you address it on the back. When the material that has to do with the most recent fiscal year becomes obsolete, we have a still more abbreviated version without the insert, which costs less than 10 cents a copy. I'll be glad to leave these with the committee or...
Fine, just... yeah, okay.
My concern is that under Senate Bill 871, I would be required to add to this kind of report a financial statement in the front, which not very many people would read, I'm afraid, and which wouldn't make information more accessible to people. I would also have to add, of course, whatever additional material the board might decide upon, and I would have to conform to a format that the board might decide upon. This committee has concerned itself in many of its deliberations with making information accessible to the public. And this, of course, as a public information officer of a state agency, is my concern. And I think the more simply we can do things and the more rapidly we can do things, the more we really make information available to the public. And I think I share the concern of the Senator Byrd and the people on the Senate committee who looked at these long, long reports which bury all the information in too many pages and too much. favor. But I think there's a compromise. I think the answer is, if we set a price limit, such as, say, 50 cents a copy, and say that anything that's going to cost more than 50 cents a copy, or even 25, has to go before the board and be looked at. That means that the simple little quick report, such as the one I presented here, could still be done, and it could be gotten out quickly without waiting until the board would meet next and deliberate. I suspect that the result would be that many state agencies would decide, let's not have to go to that board, let's do a simple little quick report, and let's keep it inexpensive, and that's really your goal in this. So, my suggestion would be that we can still make information accessible to the public, and we can still clamp down on the super fancy slick several hundred page four color jobs with the sort of amendments that I'm proposing. But I think it is very important not to require that an agency that needs to get information out to people in a simple and brief way have to go through perhaps a 3-month waiting period till the next meeting of a board before it can even get material to the printer. And I think if we can reach some sort of agreement on that sort of thing, we can accomplish the objectives without having to hogtie information people such as myself. I'm available for questions if any have.
Yeah, Senator Hurd.
Mrs. Seymour, I think you're right on the mark on what we're talking about. But certainly, I realize that the bill as it's prepared would work against what we're talking about in some cases. And I have also noted some reports that have come out since the original report was issued some months ago are now mimeographed, stapled, and so on. And we did find that, for instance, some of the slip paper and pictures and so on was occurring in some reports where the number would be limited to 200 or 300, which of course the cost of the rather substantial. I think you're correct in what you're saying. It's a good suggestion.
Senator Carson?
Fine.
Thank you very much, Senator Jay. Alan Crewson, Oregon Printing Industry.
Glenn Crewson,
oh,
the
Glenn.
General Manager of the industry, and have been for about 26 years, which will give you a little idea of the continuity of our association, which is a trade association of commercial printers in the state of Oregon. We have 110 members in Oregon, and we represent about 90% of the volume of commercial printing in Oregon. We've worked continuously with the state printing section going back to the time of Mr. Hobson, who was the state printer, and up to the present date. We've furnished the committees for studies and have made studies of various kinds for the state during that period of time. We have made recommendations to the state and its committees for and against different activities, and we have found that some of them have been accepted, some of them have not been, and we have had instances of where it has cost a good many thousands of dollars to the state of Oregon, but equipment suggestions, for instance, were looked upon with disfavor, the wrong equipment purchased, and so forth, and had to be later dispensed with. We have recognized, even though we are one of only 5 states in the United States having a state printing plant, that there is a place for state printing in Oregon, and we've tried to go with this to walk with it. We don't know why the other 45 states don't have them, but we feel they must have a very good reason for not being in state printing as such. But we're not contesting that at all, we're trying to cooperate instead. So we examine all bills that come through because we are especially interested. And when 871 came through, there were a few things that we thought we should talk to you about. First of all, we felt that the definition of report was very broad, in that it says report means any report or publication required by statute to be published by any board, commission, department, agency, or state officer. The words are very broad and takes in perhaps more than was intended. And looking through some of the reports that are listed in here, I think there are other things that would come under that definition that may not be covered. So you might want to take a look at that. The we have tonight with us four other people from the industry, which I will just introduce by name and position here, which you may want to question later on for technical or other reasons. And one of them is Whit Peets, who is the publisher of the Daily Journal of Commerce in Portland, and also the manager of Web Graphics, which is the commercial printing division of that organization. Another is Clifford Carson, who is the vice president of Norwest Publishing Company in Portland, a very large and rather new organization, which has just invested billions of dollars in printing in Oregon. He has served as a consultant to the printing industry in many years in the past, both in technical and in business activities. Warren Deal, who is the chairman of the Board of Graphic Arts Center, has also been the vice president of the Graphic Arts Technical Foundation, which is the leading technical organization in the United States for printing. And Mel Price is the manager of Shelton Turnbull Incorporated in Eugene. And, he has been on the committee for legislative reasons for many years. He's also very interested in what happens in some of those other communities other than Portland, shall we say. So, for that little background, we'd like to say that in Section 7, Paragraph D, we were quite surprised to note that whereas over many, many decades, state printing has been done both by the state printing plant and by the tax-paying plants in Oregon. There is a provision that says, except as otherwise provided in ORS 282-210, requiring all state reports to be printed by a state-owned printing office. And this is foreign to what has been the case over the many years. And we don't feel this has been given enough consideration, possibly. We don't feel that the state printer himself perhaps would want a provision of that kind. He's called upon from time to time to get work done on the outside when the state printing plant is jammed to capacity. And we also feel, too, that those of you in the legislature are trying to build Oregon's industry rather than detract from it. And within the state of Oregon, in the last several years, there's been a good many millions of dollars invest in trying to build that industry and make jobs. So we have proposed to each of you in letters, and we'd like to do so again tonight, that Section 7, Paragraph D be deleted from this bill. We don't claim any expertise on the bulk of the bill in which we are talking of the reports of the various sections, because we simply don't know about those. But in that particular case, of course, it's a very alarming tale because it's a great departure from anything that has ever been done in the state of Oregon. We're concerned, too, with on page 5 of the bill, 282-210, which is a bill that has been in the law for decades, hoping to encourage as much of the state's work to be done in the state of Oregon, make jobs for Oregon people as possible. And it has worked to the satisfaction of all parties to our putting more information. And we noticed that this has been changed to say that this will be administered to the satisfaction of the State Board of Publications rather than according to law as such. And we feel that this is too vital to the industry and to the state, as a matter of fact, as far as jobs are concerned, to put in the hands of two or three people whether a job shall be or shall not be done within the state of Oregon. So we would ask that the ORS 282.210 not be amended, but instead remain as it is and has been for many decades in our law. There are some other things that we question just a bit, but we're questioning only. We are aware that in the present law, all copy now must be submitted for approval. And I think this bill is saying that the State Board of Publications shall make that approval. We are reminding ourselves and you that there is some provision for that now, and we wondered how long jobs might be held up waiting for that particular approval if it becomes cumbersome. But we don't feel strongly on this, we only bring it to your attention. We do feel strongly about the items I've mentioned previously. We have a query on it would be section 7, paragraph 3, near the top of page 4, because we don't understand exactly what this means. It says, paragraph 3, the board shall establish a micro-publishing facility to be operated by the state archivist for the use in printing state reports under its jurisdiction. And we are aware that micro-publishing facilities, brought to their extreme, can be as big as a state printing plant in its entirety. And so we don't know what to say about this except to bring this to your attention. And you may wish to do something to limit the activities of that if you decide that this is something that you do want. Having worked with the state as long as we have and cooperated in many ways, we feel that, very frankly, our activities have saved the state of Oregon many millions of dollars over the last many years. And we unfortunately can document the occasions when our advice has not been taken in some cases and has cost the state of Oregon many thousands of dollars by having purchased the wrong things and having got rid of at a loss and this type of thing. So we're here to cooperate with the state of Oregon as we always have done. We're not here to get the state printing section out of business, as 45 of the 50 states have no such thing at all. We're not here to correct that situation at all. We're here to live with the state printing section and to cooperate with it. And we merely want to bring to your attention things that we think are wrong in this particular bill. And we really do feel very strongly about those that I mentioned, because really they're quite dangerous as we see it. And any of us who are here tonight would be happy to answer any questions that any of you might have.
Are there questions of Mr. Cousin?
Well, I'd like to ask, I've followed with some interest the last several years of printing in Oregon, and you indicated you had documented where we've gone awry by not following your advice. Could you make that available to us to your convenience?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I don't know the exact date of this. I think it was about a couple of sessions ago. One of the legislative committees was considering the acquisition of a web press for the state printing section. We were a part of a committee at that time that was composed of state printing section people and ourselves, and we recommended against it because our technical people said that particular piece of equipment would not work. It was to be purchased for the printing of bills. And we researched this and found that it would not work, it would not accept the type of plates that the state printing section thought it would. We went to all lengths to discourage the purchase of this piece of equipment, even as high as the governor. And the governor indicated that he had appointed people to take care of this, and he would prefer not to interfere with it. The people that he appointed said that we have complete faith in our investigation of this, and therefore we're going to buy the piece of equipment. So they bought this particular webcast. It would not run, it would not do the job that it was supposed to do.
Excuse me?
Yes.
It would not do the job it was supposed to do, or the job that the state thought it would do?
It would not do the job the state thought it would do. It would not do the job that the equipment people said it would do, according to the state representatives. They were told it would do a certain job. And some of the state people even went to the factory where we were told and saw this press operating. But it did not operate in the state printing section because it would not accept the type of plates that were being used here, which were paper plates. And then it was thought that perhaps the expertise of the people and the pressmen in the state printing section was not great enough to run this particular piece of equipment. Maybe they should get some outside expert pressmen to come in, which they did. They brought in outside people who were expert in this, and they couldn't make it run either. And finally, the press had to be disposed of and never printed a copy of anything that was usable. And there were several thousand dollars. I've heard over $10,000 went down the drain on this transaction.
Are you aware of any printing company our size still using copper pipe? The Argonne is still using copper pipe?
Yes, the Argonne is using copper pipe. They intend to phase out, however, and into cold cut later on.
Which basically is a web press, photo offset, or what?
Well, it's a photo offset operation. They will be using what's known as optical character recognition. Mm-hmm. The reporters actually will be doing the typesetting, and that they will be typing their story.
I understand. And the optical scan will go to the typeset.
Yes, this will go through an OCR machine and then through a computer, and finally onto copy, which can be pasted up for plate, and then will be put on offset presses. Newspaper situation is quite different, however. As we'll say quite different. It is largely different than commercial printing because the uses are different.
Of course. When you bring up the question of would you agree that the bill printing, calendar printing is a lot more like newspaper printing than printing the slick multicolored stuff for the State Highway Division?
Well, I guess
head shaking in the background.
I would say that isn't a comparison I think that we can make. I would not say that printing the bill is anything like a newspaper publishing. It's different, however, than multicolor offset printing for commercial purposes. About 4 years ago, an experiment was made, which we watched very closely, in which these bills were typed, and they were plates made on a MyTech machine. They were in on the floor of that, and this was the bill that the legislature was using. This was a test to see whether perhaps we could type these and at the same time get them on the magnetic tape and place them in the computer for retrieval purposes and so forth. The Legislative Fiscal Committee and others who were making the decisions at that time determined that the quality of the bill was not as good as Oregon legislators wanted it, and they determined that they should go back and pop type for that.
That, I might interrupt, that was a question of where IBM oversold its equipment, and we lost, I think, not more than $10,000. We lost about 10 years in legislative improvement by throwing that out, because we're going to be in that direction, in my opinion, in a very short period of time, because we're going to have 3,000 bills and no system. We're one of five states that has a state printer. We're also one of five states that doesn't have a sales tax. In order, you know, Oregon is kind of different. I think you'd agree, Glenn, that it's substantially different. I have a deep interest in this area, and I appreciate it very much. And if you have other suggestions, I was not aware that you've been that helpful, as you indicated, in directing this, because this is an Oregon problem. I think Oregon, we'll hear more testimony later, but I think right now we're doing better by hot type, which I think is your point, frankly, and I confess I think you're right, than all the computers in the world in Washington and California and the rest of it, getting the legislators the up-to-date information. But we're right at the breaking point. We're just about to collapse, and I think we'll hear more testimony about that later. we're working too many people too hard and spending too much money. I think we've got the greatest system going, but we're about to collapse, I think.
Well,
and I need your help, Frank.
Yes, well, actually, we thought 4 years ago that you were on the right track and experimenting as you did. And we do feel that the equipment suppliers oversold themselves, but they often do.
Oh, you should have seen the ones we turned down.
It's something we all have to guard against. But I would think that the time is coming, as you say, when this has to be done. And this brings up the point which I hadn't intended to bring up tonight, but we are aware that your state printer now, or any of his predecessors, have never had the funds to travel to see what other legislators do, or other state, or other printers do, to service legislature.
Well, there's only four other states you can go to, as yes. I understand.
However, commercial printers are doing it.
Oh, I see.
Okay. The other 45, you see. So it's being done. So if you're interested in the other method, the code type methods, and the retrieval system, computers and so forth, why, we really think some funds should be available from your top man in the printing field to find out what's being done in other areas. And not use the trial and error method, which is very expensive, which has been done here before. Let's see what's working across the United States.
Well, I'd almost disagree with you. A $10,000 investment for a trial and error or some of the other things compared to the state of Washington, where they put in over $1 million in their more error than trial, I think, in their program. And I agree with you, though. I don't know whether we want John taking the trip. Maybe the chairman of the committee can take the trip. But your point's well taken.
Yeah, in our industry, just as an aside, in our industry, we're very much in favor of computers, and there's a lot of computerized typesetting going on in the industry. On the other hand, I agree with you by saying that a lot of people started this too soon in such an exotic manner that some of them actually went broke. Their whole operation went broke because of lost information and a good many other things that happened. So we're not computer happy at all. And on the other hand, we're not negative on it. We'd like to see it done in an orderly manner and studied properly. But we agree that there must be better ways of doing things as time goes on. And we'd like to cooperate with you and helping you find out what those are and working with you on it. And we have technical people to do it.
It's great. I'm sorry to take us down a different
trail. No, that's quite all right. No, I think
I know
this
Fred
is a good,
time on it.
Good area to pursue.
Thank you very much.
Mr.
Right.
Chairman.
Yes, Fred.
One question I'd like to ask about, do you have any idea how much the state of Oregon spends in printing each biennium?
No, I'd have to ask the state printer that. He's here tonight.
Well, I understand, and he can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I, as I recall, they study everybody on it. It seems like it's $8 million. And the second question, do you think that if we were to say, you know, to a state agency, you have to come up with more realistic figures in terms of numbers and reports and all this kind of stuff. You have to consider the quality. Could you get by with just a cheap process for your reports and a staple in the upper left-hand corner or something? Do you think that some of these kind of requirements would help ease the pressure the state printer feels in terms of this operation?
Well, the history on this has been that the legislators have determined this in that they wanted a particular quality to read. And they didn't like the typewritten quality, as a matter of fact. They wanted the printed copy, and that's the reason they went back to hot type.
Except this, it's interesting, though, this beginning of this session, the different reports that came through from interim committees, comparing that to the one from 2 years ago, there did seem to be a difference.
But there are many ways of putting ink on paper, shall we say, and some are less expensive than others, but also the quality might be less. I think there has to be a quality determination by someone aligned with the cost, and I just made the observation that it's the legislature and its members who have decided this year before when perhaps you and I might have thought this particular report is plenty good enough to read it.
Okay,
so others might have said, well, it isn't good enough.
That's one of the things that we're getting to, and evidently from 2 years ago when the resolution was passed, it was the determination of the legislators that voted for it, possibly a cheaper quality is suitable, you can still read it. Another question, have you personally worked with any agency, state agencies, that in preparing printing and so on?
Not in preparing printing. We've worked with not that I personally know. We've had a committee that was a part of a joint state industry committee.
What I'd like to know, if you can answer this, if not, somebody probably is here tonight that can. If you can, for instance, if I worked in the Department of Commerce, for the Barber Report, and I had a report that I wanted to print, and I came to you, what do you think my reaction would be if you asked me quality of paper, about number, things of this type? I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, if we were to counsel you on how...
Well, I'm not sure. You know, if I came to you and I said, okay, I want a book, I want these pictures in the book, so would you volunteer to me that the information that we can do it cheaper this way?
Well, to the extent of my ability, but I'd probably refer you to someone in the industry who's more expert at that.
But if I was determined that this was the kind of thing that I was going to that I wanted to bargain for,
we would be very happy to get the information for you. I personally would not be as expert at that as some others who are printing every day. I manage the association rather than being a printer per se, you see. And certainly the people who are doing this every day and know the cost of one process against another and the quality of it would be in a position to do that, we'd be very happy to assist in any way we could.
Even if I didn't ask for it?
No, we wouldn't want to impose it on you, no.
Okay, that's a question.
Absolutely not.
Well, that's a question.
But
I want to make this clear to you. I think you and the private printers and so on that we've had any experience with, they're doing a very fine job. So there's no question. I think there is a question about possibly people ordering things. And this is one of the things that came up during our study on this. People ordering printing and so on. Think about.
Well, that's why we feel that you should have a printer that knows printing and that he's the man to advise all along the line. You have had over the years. He's had as much help from us as we could get him and from others.
Yes, Sammy Carson.
Ben, at your convenience, could you provide us, if you care to, you listed the one $10,000 web. Might be helpful to some of us to show us where we've made other mistakes of misfeasance or malfeasance or nonfeasance in your view. So we don't agree to agree with you, but I think most of us are pretty pleased with what service we've been getting both from the public and the private sector. But our printing costs are going bananas, and we're going. I don't think we ought to be talking to you, frankly. I think it's the agencies that we're trying to get at and not the printing. I think you're here because you see the need to speak to it. But frankly, the easiest real problem has been, and you and I both know, that an IBM Composer, if you're doing it depends whether you're going to mail it or not mail it. But if you're going to do the IBM Composer, and John, who prints the Orbeam? Okay, there's an example of one small, compressed type, I think, excellent publication. But I could show you ream after ream of garbage, triple space, typed. It's the old, pardon me, Ditto, Education Ditto complex. They haven't changed at all, and they mail it. Any economy by mimeographing is lost by paying postage rather than going
first
to IBM.
Class.
Yeah, first class, rather than going to IBM Composer. Putting on a plate, printing it, and running it, and squeezing 7 pages legal down to 1 page. So there are a lot of economies that are It's not the printer's fault. Our agencies are vying for each other on how to please the legislature or the public or whatever it is. Barb Seymour brought in her pamphlet, and it certainly is more ecologically sound. I have a hard time deciding whether we even need it at all, which even is even more ecologically sound. That is, we just don't have that publication.
Well, let me say that we'd be glad to cooperate with you in any way we can on any studies you want to make on any of these fields.
Great. Could we have your other examples of our bad examples at your leisure, not now, at your leisure?
We'll look into that. At the moment, the big ones come to mind, and this was one that was rather recent and one that we put a lot of work in and spent a lot of money researching, and our advice was not taken, and we felt rather badly, in fact, it just wouldn't work. That's all that money was down there.
I suggested that on the floor of the Senate today, and they voted against me, too. I know how you feel.
I do want you to know that this bill and this study is in no way critical of the private printing industry or the public printing industry.
Yes. Well, we appreciate that.
I think Senator Carson is correct in talking about asking for our mistakes, because that's what it's all about.
Yes. We would say, however, that if Section 17 went through, yes, it would crucify us.
Well, we appreciate your counsel.
And also on the change on ORS 282210.
Thank you
very much.
John Gustafson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Gustafson, testifying for the Labor Commissioner. Recently, the Labor Commissioner sent two letters to this committee, one regarding Senate Bill 71, or excuse me, Gate 71, which I will pull a couple of excerpts out of, if I may, and read them. And then the other one involving House Bill 2157, which is to be discussed, I guess, later on tonight. Both of them have suggested amendments to them. Before I start, I'd like to say that I agree with Senator Hurd. Since his committee met, many of us in government have become more aware of the publications and the costs involved with it. We, in our agency, I can say, Senator Hurd, that we've gone so far as the fact that my father-in-law is not taking pictures at the front of her wife.
And I noticed on your letterhead here that you...
Yeah, congratulations, by the way.
Very good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I guess that is true.
A little economy there. That's very good.
We recognize the merit of the bill, but we'd like to deal, if we could, with one portion of it, which we hope can be amended. On page 2 it starts, the governor and legislative assembly have the right to ask for biennial reports presented in a manner that's meaningful to them, although, as indicated earlier in the letter, we believe state elected officials should not have the reports fragmented. What the commissioner is referring to there is that it would be better, we believe, to have the Board of Education and the Bureau of Labor and the Attorney General's Office, or whatever biennial reports come out from involved elected officials, rather than broken up and placed randomly or by some decision of a board some other kind of board. But we think we prefer to have it put together as the agency exists. However, when it comes to other publications of an elected official, and when it comes to administrative rules, which we believe are covered by ORS Chapter 183, then we believe that there are some disturbing implications. The bill is written to allow one elected official to appoint a board, which will then...
Can I interrupt? I'm sorry. The preoccupation of the elected official, what that means... What I'm worried about is why now... Not speaking to the question of who's elected statewide, I understand that. But we're now talking about you're sending information to the legislature. And I won't take you down the path of trying to defend why we still elect the labor commissioner and don't elect our highway commissioner based on dollars spent or impact on the public or any other term. We're now at with our five elected officials. Maybe this is not an appropriate question, but I just wonder, you draw a distinction between elected official and non-elected official that I don't care to draw. I'll be right, it seems to me that the chancellor's reports are in the same category as the superintendent's reports, superintendent of public instruction, higher education, primary and secondary. fact that one is elected official and one an appointed official, I don't, as far as getting the information out to the public, it fails. The only thing I can grasp onto is one is running for office, and all of a sudden, publications become important, particularly if you have your name on it. Now, I don't mean that for your superior, but I do know that we've stripped, over my no vote, the Secretary of State's name off of his publication, or one of his publications, the voter stamp. So I know the legislature's very concerned about undue advantage of elected officials. So the question I ask, and I don't mean to, I apologize for interrupting, but you, I noticed in your letter, you hang on to the question of the difference between an elected official and another public official. And I understand the practical difference, but what is the difference when it comes to giving out information? So maybe in your discussion, you might touch on it.
I will try to.
You might take a look at the conflicts.
The bill is written allows one elected official statewide, one board, which will say how other elected officials shall report in public. That's part of the answer to your question. We see the board as being able to oversee administrative rules by virtue of providing the standards and preparation and presentation of quote reports, as well as having the power to deny approval. In other words, the feeling of people who should analyze this bill, that it's generally written enough that there could be, that board could really have control over things as specific as publication rules, and that could create a problem. The problem that comes to mind are, how do you prevent this board from exercising control over substantive content, from determining priorities of another elected official as to publications he will make within his budget? How do we prevent the possibility of control over content or even disapproval of a publication because of philosophical and political differences? All state officers, including the Labor Commissioner, are elected by the people on the basis of a particular political, social, and economic philosophy. They are directly accountable to and responsible to all the people whom they have been elected to serve. That's another differentiating fact between the appointed and the elected official, is that the elected official, having been elected, is in a different position from the appointed official. There's a certain communication involved with the mandate of being elected that would, one would think, would allow the elected official to communicate back to the public whether or not the grounds upon which he ran were really being validly carried out. An elected official is given a budget to do certain things, which includes allowances for publications necessary for carrying out statutory responsibilities. The allowance may be for special reports, for rules, guidelines, interpretations of law, etc. These are for the public benefit, so that the people are informed and know their rights. A board appointed by one elected official should not in any way have the power to take away the other elected official's ability to administer their own offices with full freedom of expression and within the right to determine their own policy priorities within the budget allocated. I might add on that in terms of the legislature has a control over the budget, the amount of money that we get.
It's not very much. Well, that's a way to take that as an insult, but we just thought we were so liberal with your budget.
There are three members of the meeting.
So I said, I just lean back and let you guys talk.
Our budget has already been reported to us.
John, do you mean to tell me that the only money that you spend on publications is exactly what we allocate to you?
In terms of printed publications like that, it's pretty darn tight to control. If you're talking about mimeograph and things off, we do run a mimeograph setup where we will print up things on mimeograph machines. In fact, some of our publications, one of them, we really ran out of money for our publication budget, was put out on that machine.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask John?
Yes, you may ask.
I can't resist this.
I knew I shouldn't have come.
Where do you think the idea for this study came from? What was the reason behind it?
Well, I presume.
Was it thy neighbor and not thyself?
No, I think that there, I don't know exactly, I believe it's a pretty leading question.
Yeah, I was going to say, watch yourself, John.
I think, I've heard it mentioned here tonight, large agencies such as the Highway Commission. Now, I presume that's one of the things that you're concerned about, was that the amount of money that's spent from really wealthy agencies that are operating off a dedicated fund. that are able to put out really beautiful documents. And, but I also presume you are concerned about other things too. I guess it has to do with efficiency.
Have you been through your supply room lately?
Our supply room? Yes.
And all of your reports are, not all, but many of your reports are expected by the end of the year or the end of the biennium. That'll be the end of that report. We won't get to throw any away, which is going to be great.
We keep, I'm not sure I have to, I'm not sure I can track directly
well,
the question.
John, let me say this, that one of the things in the study,
publication.
The young man that did a lot of field work went through the supply rooms and various agencies and checked out reports that were on the shelves and found many that were years old and completely out of date that you couldn't possibly send out to anyone. And, you know, it was a steady story along the way. That, you know, obviously, this year had been, they overordered, this year they overordered.
Well, I can give you a pretty good story, and in fact, in a few minutes, if I could even go and visit our supply room, if it was that interesting. Yes, but I can.
Not fascinating.
Why in a few minutes?
Well, I figured right now.
Pull a monkey
out. I was going to say somebody on the line right now.
In our case, in terms of our publications, we have some publications that are left over, but we have publications that are left over that we think can still go out. But let me give you an idea of the picture of where we are in the Bureau of Labor publication. Again, recognizing our budget has gone out. But there's one document, probably one of the most popular documents and most useful documents that's been put out in the last 10 years, called the Labor Law Digest, which has not been put out for 10 years because, in fact, we couldn't really put together the program to be able to justify it to the other publications that we were committed to put out. That indicates some kind of priority that we've established. The team wagers handbook has not been put out for about 2 years, and that's really almost a mimeograph job. It isn't very expensive at all. We have put out publications that have come out from our research department, but we've tried to focus those publications and zero them in on the current problem area. So in terms of, I know it sounds like, you know, Bureau of Labor is not one of the problem areas you're talking about. I know for a fact that your study did deal with part of the Bureau of Labor. You know, I think you did discuss the Bureau of Labor. But I believe that we are not really very darn wasteful when it comes to state money as it applies to publication. I think we're pretty darn tightly controlled. Bureau of Labor.
John, I see you and the Justice is represented, and maybe one or two other agencies here tonight. DEQ has been represented. But, so I don't want to make it sound like this report was sparked because the Bureau of Labor or what Lee Johnson did or anything like that, because that's just the case. But if we went, as legislators, went through our files, how many reports, duplicate copies of reports would we find in the Bureau of Labor that possibly were sent to us prior to the opening of the session or given to us when we arrived, come to us in committee, and are also placed on our desks on the floor? Like, what is it, what's that one report about?
Middle-aged workers report.
Yeah, middle-aged.
Up against the middle-aged career. That was the one, well, I could answer that pretty easily.
Okay, that's one I remember.
That's one.
Are there any more?
No. Those two were really the ones that we, the biennial report, which we put out, I think, about 500 copies of the biennial report, and we put that out every 2 years, about 500 copies, so that people who inquire about the Bureau of Labor in between that don't have to put together, we have something on hand. There are certain economies when you get to a certain level of production. We put out 500 copies of those, 500, 100 of them approximately are from the legislature, another knockoff, about 150 go to, about another 50 or so probably go to agencies, state agencies, and our sister agencies, another 25 or probably another 50. So they were taking care of 200, maybe have 300 to last us through the next 2 years. So
okay, how much would your middle income report cost to?
$1,500.
How much would that average out to per copy?
That particular thing probably ran out about pretty close to $1 a copy.
Okay. Do you charge anything for any of your reports?
We sure didn't start. We don't now. We didn't then. We as Senator Ripper, Senator Finley, know, we indicated that we're going to run a dry run on this. I want one publication this next time, if we can put it together, a dry run where we do charge, and we're going to try to get it out even on the newsstand kind of thing if possible. I don't know if we can do it. But it's been done in other states, so we'd like to run, make a dry run at it and see if we believe it can be self-sustaining. This one doc, this one
thing. All we're asking for, John.
Yeah, and we're going to make a dry run at it and see if we believe it can be self-sustaining. We'd like to have kind of our own little rotating publications fund to be self-sustaining. Things like They Carry the Burden Alone, as popular as that was, went through two printings, and it had a national impact. As popular as that was, it could not be self-sustaining. Might have been able to get some money out of it, but never could have been self-sustaining. Or could the other publication, the one that you mentioned, the agency publication. There are some publications you think could be self-sustaining. That pretty much concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. The main amendment we're suggesting is that no statewide official other than the governor shall be subject to the requirements of this act except for provision for required printing by state-owned printing facilities.
Are there further questions, John?
Does the Bureau of Labor ever end up with a private printing job that's been either contracted out through the state printer or otherwise?
Yes.
Has the private printing been satisfactory?
Yes. The state printer has a problem that I think they're probably pretty well understaffed over there. It's like budgeting for war, in a way. When war comes, that's when the enormous demand obviously comes. And the equivalent of war comes during legislative sessions, and it's practically impossible to get anything printed from an outside standpoint, from an agency standpoint, during a time when there's such enormous demand. I think they're probably staffed for... I think they're probably understaffed there. But we have had good results with private printers and determined good speed of delivery. I presume cost, because it's all funneled through the state.
There's a Section 8, which is probably out of something. Well, I looked this statute up, and the section was adopted in 1905 or 1915, one or the other. It hasn't been amended. It says, before being printed, all copy must be submitted to the department. That meant the printing department. Under this bill, it must be submitted to the State Board of Publications for approval. Have you submitted your copy to anyone for approval, the copy for approval?
Okay, the question gets to be down substantive approval, or I think the formality is we do go through the state printer. Maybe they can answer that question better than I can. We do send our copy to them. They do look at it, and they do say they do have an effect, I'm sure have an effect on how it's printed. As to the substance of it, I can't think of them ever having made any stab at affecting the substance of it.
Well, this bill speaks to reports, and especially biennial reports of agencies. I'm sure whoever drafted this bill thought that section would only apply to biennial reports, but in plain language, it says all copy. Copy is a big word. Biennial report is a smaller modification of that. I'm hoping if we adopt any part of this, we add amendments to say biennial report copy there. Because it doesn't seem reasonable to require the state printer to approve for substance, but yet the sentence doesn't make any modification. It just says all copy has to be looked at in advance. That must be a lot more than what's really done anymore. I see the state printer agreeing that they don't check it for substance or four-letter words. Like that. Did I interrupt you? Was there another point you want to make, John?
No, only point is that we are concerned about 2157. We did submit a letter to the concern on the House side, and I don't know if that's going to be. I understand it's not going to be heard.
So we have a letter in it.
We have a letter here stating your points that you want. Thank you very much, John. We don't have anybody else signed up, but I'm sure there are a couple here who would like to testify.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hear from the state creditor.
All right, he is here. I wonder if he would come up and we could...
The reason I haven't signed up to testify is that as a departmental policy, do not testify unless we're asked, so now I've been asked.
You've been asked.
I don't have any prepared testimony, but we've got to answer questions if you have some.
I think we have a couple. Senator Hurd.
I'd like to ask, I think you know the intent of this bill, and I'm not sure that it does everything that we want it to do, but I think that if it's prepared properly, it could be in system. And I think you're aware of the concern the legislators have had relative to training costs and so on in the state. How can we work this bill so that it will both assist you and get at the problem that, that we're interested in terms of waste, in terms of possibly state agency people ordering printing when they're not familiar with the costs of paper, and when possibly a mimeograph job would do the trick, or it would be cheaper, Senator Carson pointed out,
Before you answer, would you give your name for the tape so it'll be on here and
yes,
everything? Yes.
Chairman, I am John Chamberlain, state printer.
Fine. No, thank you.
Well, you've asked a lot of questions in that.
Just ramble. That's fine.
All right. I think one of the problems is simply this. That we have a basic philosophy that the state of Oregon has hired a manager of an operation, and then you should be able to depend on that manager to do whatever is reasonable and prudent. I'm in a difficult position, for example, of the Oregon, the Highway Division coming to me with a very elaborate report, and I'm questioning them, saying, look, this is really pretty excessive, haven't you ought to cut down on this sum? And they say no. And I say, well, fine. I wonder, does your administrator, is he aware that this is being published to this extent? And they say, yes, he is, he condones it, and so forth.
Can I interrupt, John?
Yes.
Excuse me, interrupting.
Yes, go right ahead.
One of the major printing outfits in the state of Oregon is the Highway Division. What's the distinction, when it comes out of turning out stuff, they don't come to you on all the stuff. They have a real process, my understanding is, for turning out a whole bunch of stuff internally. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, I wouldn't say that their facilities are very large. They're more than they should be, in my opinion.
I don't mean to feed you straight lines, John.
Well, no, I mean, the press equipment they have, for example, is not very large. It's not anything that they would be able to compete with a state printing plant or a private printing plant. They don't have that kind of technology. I think they do more than they should. That's my own view in view of economy and state government. I don't think it's cost justified. I think it might be in their own minds justified from a service or control aspect. And I think they can give you some pretty sound arguments for that. Whether you want to agree with them or not, or is that something else?
Could I interrupt you again?
Yes.
In terms of cost on books, like interim committee report, something equivalent to an interim committee report from the Highway Department, whatever. Could you reflect for just a minute on some of the costs per book that you've experienced?
Well, in small runs, of course, you're going to run a higher cost.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, you run some of the reports that run as high as $5 a book, I suppose. Maybe even higher than that. I don't have any that comes to mind right away. But, of course, the more you order, the bigger the cost, but the less cost per book.
Is there a charge on these that you know of? Some of these that you're thinking of?
I mean, the agencies charge people, and do they have them for sale?
Hear me, ask Mr. Gustafson if they were charging the Bureau of Labor, and he indicated they're going to. Are these $5 books that you're talking about, is there a charge attached?
You mean for them to sell to the general public?
Right.
I have no idea.
There's no $5 that you've noticed on the cover.
No.
Thank you.
Well, There are, I...
Some are.
Yeah, for, revenue, for instance, has a whole series on gift taxes and inheritance taxes.
Oh, Blue Book.
Yeah, where there are charges.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I've lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry, John.
I don't remember where I was, but I think you were talking...
We were talking about the Highway Division.
No, we were talking about the control aspect of publications. In other words, as a civil servant, I don't feel it's my place to tell someone who is, has more management responsibility than I how to run his plant or how to run his shop. I can advise him, and I do. The advice that I give usually is ignored. I don't think it's any secret that in state government right now, I'm not universally loved for my attitude in trying to enforce what I think is legislative intent. It is difficult to control a situation where I think that an agency must be under the responsibility of its director.
Okay, now, can I interrupt again?
Yes.
Hang on to your train of thought. This is what we're talking about now. This is what came out in this report. I'm aware that there's been some criticism and probably some legislation introduced that would, quote, get at the state printer, unquote. I'm not interested in that because this, and this is what we've tried to convey, this bill is dealing with the subject that you're talking about right now. With someone coming to you and saying, we want X number of copies of this particular report. And you are not in a position to say, hey, what about the cost of paper and so on? You've got to do as you're told, more or less, and print it no matter what it costs. And this is what we're talking about. And this is why I wanted to tell the private printing people, and why I want to tell you, this bill is not aimed at the management because I don't know anything about that. But it's aimed at your order, your work order, and that's the important.
Because if he gets to be real sticky with it, for example, if I tell the governor that he can't publish something, I mean, that would be a...
We had experience on ballot measure one, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I don't this sort of thing, in other words, they manage their shop, they ought to be able to be adult enough and knowledgeable enough that they have got to do whatever is reasonable and responsible. So it's a little difficult for me to take the position of being a censor, in other words. Now I do this is the policy we follow in State Printing Division. Any job that comes to our shop, I don't care whether it's a business card, a business form, or publication, my staff has orders that anything that is unusual or appears excessive comes to my desk immediately. I usually handle it myself by giving a call to the person who charged who has ordered the job, and I question whether this has had the approval of a responsible person in the agency and so forth, and question him about the excesses and so forth. I gave an example of someone, of all things, who had submitted an order for a three-color while you were out bad. I mean, printed in three colors. I won't name the agency, but unless you ask me. But this is the kind of thing that comes to my desk. And then I call them and say, look, this really is out of line, but you ought to take another look at it. Most often, they will not. Sometimes they will. Now, from my viewpoint, and I've looked at the bill very carefully, if these you've asked me, I'll make my comments on what I feel needs to be done to correct this problem. I would not object at all to a committee or a board to help to set the policy at all. I don't believe it's necessary to create a separate board and director. I think it's expensive, and I think that we have enough people on the state payroll now that it can be done within the state itself. Possibly by a, this is just simply a suggestion, possibly by a member of the legislative fiscal office, legislative budget office, or executive department, the librarian perhaps, or someone who has knowledge in publications, to give this advice to the Department of General Services or the state attorney who then would enforce it. Then it's not one man who is being criticized, but it is a group of people who have theoretically digested the problem and come up with policy that makes sense for all state agencies. That would be my first suggestion. The other thing, in the law that I would question, as it is written, section 6, I'm assuming that the board would not be involved in editorial functions for the coordination of publications, like, for example, is done in the state of Washington. have to work this out with the agencies. Well, this is an area where the board would be helpful in setting some kind of policy by deciding who would combine their reports into what publication and so on. All right, the other thing, of course, and I have to agree with private industry here, that during the legislative period particularly, my hands are pretty well tied in doing legislative work, and all of our efforts are geared to that. I would not want to be restricted by saying that all reports have to be printed, per se, in the state printing plan. I think that would be difficult to give the agency the timely service that they ought to have. Another question that I would raise is the question, I think that we do need to define micro-publishing, as that is a fairly new term and can be a fairly sophisticated type of thing. And I think that ought to be defined a little bit more clearly as to what micro-publishing is to encompass. Another item I would like to comment on is Section 8. And I think Senator Fadley mentioned this very clearly, that this in effect wipes out all control of all copy that comes in from the state printing division. I think that I would advise against that, because if you want any control at all, then I think we ought to be looking at all publications or all forms or whatever comes into the printing plant. And so the wording on that ought to change somewhat. I can see some good things in this bill. For example, the Supreme Court, as long as we are going to be responsible for printing the Supreme Court oriented reports, perhaps.
Can I interrupt?
Yes.
How long are we going to do that, John?
Well, sir, as it stands now, probably for another 2 years.
Who prints those covers?
Well, those are printed by a professional bookbinder.
A professional bookbinder?
Mm-hmm.
Is the stylized lettering of the temporary clerk that happens to be the, whatever we call it now, I'm a nut, we keep having the books the same size, so there could be a lot of difference. And everything's the same except the name of the person who's the reporter.
Yes.
And those there seems to be a combat to see who can get the largest print. In fact, if you look at them, you'll see that the reporter's name, it's all done by West Publishing Company anyway, as you know. The reporter is nothing more than a collator. The head notes come from West Publishing Companies. There seems to be a war going on as whose reporter can get the biggest print on the Oregon reports. And it has nothing, we ought to take the vassal off. You can't have a reporter on front of that. Who does that reporting? Who does the printing there?
Well, this, of course, is determined by the publisher, which is the Supreme Court. We publish what we're asked to. I didn't thought of having a state printer's name on the back, as it used to be years ago.
That makes a lot more sense than having a reporter who's a state employee who does it part-time normally.
I'm sorry that Senator Fadley isn't here, but I do believe, no, West is the one in Minneapolis, is it, or whoever it is that makes up the, that writes them up, writes the review. I think that we did give direction to them to get out of it, and they have 2 years to buy it from West, because it's cheaper to buy it from them than it is for us to do it.
Well, there are a lot of problems involved with it, but...
Just between lawyers, though, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. The last person I'd want to favor is the West Publishing Company. That's Senator Fadley talked about a rip-off the other day. That's got to be the classic rip-off. Yeah.
I don't know too much about it, except that the argument there was that some reporters wanted the Oregon report, or some of the old-time lawyers wanted the Oregon report, yet all the work was done back there anyway. You might as well get it there, and you get it. We don't have to tie up a couple $1 million in these things.
That argument's been around for a decade or so.
And when you start looking at how much money we've got tied up in it, and what it's going to cost just to get there.
The argument I have at the moment, of course, is because of the impact that we have on the state printing plan and our subsequent ability to serve the legislature. And you know that's a very real problem.
You're looking for hills and valleys, then, aren't you?
That's correct. And if we eliminate the Oregon reports, we're printing to 96 positions. And I already have to go out and recruit something like 8 to 10 people, and the legislature comes into town. It's becoming increasingly difficult.
Okay, John, West, are they going to pick up maybe the Court of Appeals opinions, which are not published in West, are they?
Oh, yes.
Are they?
Oh,
okay,
yes.
The next question.
They combine them, you see. That's why they get better service and why they have less costs.
And their books cost more. I understand. Okay. How about tax court opinions?
We do those, but they are not included in West, as I understand it.
Well, Okay, the one thing you've been beat out of is the, from the binding standpoint, of course, the Attorney General's opinions.
He's gone to the pamphlet for it.
To the three holes, 8.5 by 11, those nonsensical things that everybody else is using. But we'll hear from the Attorney General shortly.
He did that as an economy move, and it's certainly a lot faster.
Well, I think it's a lot better, frankly. It doesn't look as good on the shelf, but we're not really worried about that, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, what would happen if all of the determination for quality, paper, style, things of this type, were turned over to you? Legitimately your function, so that you could, you would have in the statute the veto over the barber's board, whether or not they were going to put out their glossy picture.
Well, what would happen in the first place? I'd be less
of a... Oh, I'm sure. But aren't you the one in the state that knows something about the cost of printing? Isn't that your job?
I should say I'm one of the men in the state that know, but I like to think that I'm most knowledgeable because that's what I'm paid for. And I have a lot of years in the printing business. But I do not have the authority, even though...
If we gave you the authority, we can give it to you.
Well, let me put it this way. I think the authority is there because I think that I've read the law enough that I think that I interpret it right, but I think the authority is there. And yet I work for the Department of General Services director, who, in effect, is the responsible authority. I work for him. So, in effect, it's his responsibility. He seeks my advice.
The barber's board, I don't know why I picked the barber's board. Barber's board, the boss from the Commerce Department is Mr. Lutie.
Right.
And but in the day-to-day operations of the barbers, is the director of that particular agency that makes the decision. If there's something really big in front of you that comes in, then Lutie has to step in and make some decision and offer some counsel. Why couldn't this apply in the case?
Well, I do, of course, give counsel to
Well, them. Yeah, but like, if I come to you to print my glossy, slicky, why can't you veto?
Well, I can veto you.
Why don't you?
Well, I do, sometimes.
Well, if I had insisted that you print your three-colored volume route before...
Let's put it a little different way, Fred.
Well, the thing is, here's the thing that I'm faced with. I make the recommendation that you not print it, and I tell you you cannot print it, I will not accept it. First of all, am I overstepping my authority? Am I acting in the role of a censor? Is it proper for me to tell the governor, for example, he can't print something? At the same time, if I am successful in this, then he goes to the director and says, well, Chamberlain is being uncooperative and being unreasonable and arbitrary. Well, of course, I can be overruled. I can certainly be overruled by the governor.
I was thinking about just taking an agency like the Highway Department. Do you think that he would be able to stand up if Mr. Jackson said, we want this to be four color so-and-so? Said no.
Or Mr. Claybo.
Or anyone. But I just picked one that was not an elected.
What if we asked for one more report? And that was your cost analysis by some... one member from the Bureau of Labor and one member from the Attorney General's office or whatever, but non-printers. And the final report laid on every legislator's desk after all this inundation, herniated postmen throughout the whole state delivering these reports, is your report on a cost analysis on the basis of per page and the alternative critiquing the reports, which is then presented to Ways and Means when they're going over the agency budget. See, you can't really get in the question of cutting down content, or you're a censor, and that's really bad. Ways and Means can whack out their publication budget, and it's not censoring, it's economists. And it seems to me that maybe it's how we phase it. Let the agency establish its own standard. Mm-hmm. And if they're verbose, and they decide to go slick paper, and all the photographs, and they're really trying not to report what they did, but sell themselves for another budget, then you can critique it on the basis of unit cost and the whole thing. And I think we get right down to, that's kind of the thing your study did, Fred.
Really, that's kind of what you're after, because if I'm thinking about Don and Ways and Means. Somebody comes in with a $40,000 printing budget. We haven't the slightest idea of what the $40,000 stands for. We got some of them that are many times that. Tax Revenue Department, how would we know what they're putting out? I do know they put out some fine...
$40,000 may be the biggest bargain Oregon had in a $2,000 out of some shops where they blow it all.
Could be the worst part, yeah.
Could be a very uneconomical.
And when I saw this in the bill about submitting a copy for approval to Board of Publications, I thought, well, that's going to go. So we can strike it. So yeah, that might be an idea. What do you think of that, John?
Well, except for the comments that I've made on it, I know what you're trying to get at. I would appreciate the help of some kind of policy direction, whether it is in this law or some other law. I'm willing to accept. I'm anxious to have some policy direction.
Maybe that's where the board could come in to take the heat off of you if the board gave the report, saying that we put out this and this, and it cost that much, but it could have cost this much if it had just been on... green printing on black paper or something else, and it had their two colors.
We've had some.
I don't encourage the creation of a new board, because I do believe it can be done within the function of the government right now.
I'll give you some kind of an advisory board made up of other people, maybe within your own department.
Well, you see, from here in Washington, I have some discussion with him. He's in a little different situation, but he actually appointed the board. He's an appointed official. He actually goes on and appoints the board through the government of these various agencies to advise him on these publications. That way he is not the go. It works very well. He's not paying more for an additional bunch of state employees or a director and so forth. He simply gets the policy from the board and he enforces it.
How about a board within the Department of General Services?
Well, I would recommend that it be someone that is responsive to the legislative requirement, first of all, and I'm sure they don't thank me for doing this, but I would suggest legislative fiscal would supply a member for one, executive department would supply a member for another, and maybe your major agency somewhere or someone who has man-to-man muscle or something like this would supply the other members.
We'd only need three, you and one, the two that you've named would be big enough board.
Mr. Chairman, how about somebody from somebody skilled in graphics, somebody skilled I can't think of any better way of kind of watching over the departments by having somebody like Glenn or some of the others who appear on the outside, who have experience on the outside, so they're always thinking of how they could do it better by not buying a $10,000 web press or by some of the other tricks that they picked up. I think we have both a positive and a negative. I think one of the real problems is, I'll bet you the agency that asks for a three-color while you were out, and that galls me. We shouldn't, for state, while you were out, that means they weren't at their desk, and I wonder where they were. If they're a copy, I'm really bugged, because that kind of accentuates the thing. But I wonder that maybe the person requesting it didn't know that costs more. Now that means to a printer that sounds ludicrous, but I'll bet you the average cat doesn't understand the difference between black ink and brown. I don't know.
Well, this agency discovered very quickly that it does.
Well, I think we have a Gutenberg mindset, and for some reason most of the citizens haven't caught up with the new changes in printing, and there are economies in size, and there are standardizations. I'm surprised that an agency at this state game can even have authority to differentiate between a highway department while you're out slip and motor vehicles while you're out slip. That just seems to me to be absurd because you can print it in the volume. What I'm saying is
one slip for all ages.
Yeah. Maybe there's a different reason. Maybe there's some justification, but there's a tendency to put from the desk of, and there, you know, it's a little ego problem we have, that everybody has to have a little symbol in there. And legislators are probably perhaps the worst, so I say that out front. You know better than we do. But just seems to me that a lot of it's dealt from ignorance, and not necessarily from an attempt to hurt the public or to spend tax dollars or to do anything else. It's just that we're not very wise. And I think that a board that has a negative aspect in that it critiques the printing, but also a positive aspect in trying to develop the kind of things you're talking about, where you try to guide an agency in saying, hey, wow, wouldn't a one color be just as good? And maybe an 8x10, so you don't have to run it through the question. Do you use an 8x10 sheet and waste half the paper, or do you run it through your cutter and cut it in half and print it? This kind of thing. You could barely be a help to us.
You don't have the time this evening to go through all the things that I listened to over a period of 2 years.
I don't know how you have the time to go through.
Well, I don't, and it's difficult to do the job. I'm not really that overstaffed. I'm not making people more comfortable, but I do that in someplace else. But I think that we do not have enough people to give that kind of assistance, I think, the way we should. Of course, I'm service-oriented, always have been, and this is a little bit of a frustration to me. But I do believe that some support as far as some kind of policy direction would be most helpful. And then the other points that I related to the bill, I think I would not want to have my hands tied as far as where the printing was actually done. I would like to ask the latitude on that. And then plus the micro publishing, I think that should be looked at very carefully.
John, can I interrupt just a minute? This bill is, I do not know the people that drafted it, Fred, but I have 2 pages of conflicts, double-spaced, and I mean, just a tremendous amount. And I was thinking while we were talking here, and I want to see what you and maybe the other members of this, as a starter, maybe we would be better off to do just exactly what we're talking about, is create the board who, for this biennium, would make a report on alternate means of printing and give us the cost to be reported back to the legislature, to legislative fiscal, and create somewhat the board that you were talking about. Maybe eliminate most of this and just cite the type of responsibility that they would have, namely to try to determine what costs are. We could write this in 1 or 2 pages, avoid all these conflicts that we have here, and perhaps accomplish the same thing that we're after. And we would have one biennium to do it and see what kind of a difference this would make in the next budgets that were submitted. I'm sure it'd make many of the agencies think twice about it if a report was given to us listing everything they had printed and cost. We also have a problem in Ways and Means in that we have people with budgets of, we'll just say, $20,000 for printing, when actual printing amounted to $40,000. But they come back with $20,000 again because they have some other little things that they kept hidden. This way, we would have perhaps a closer view of what they're actually doing and the kinds of things, maybe, that they are printing that we're not aware of.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's fine, except I think it's important that we keep the two points separate. One, the different kinds of printing, or whether or not we should go with some other kind of printing. Two, the amount of waste involved in printing, the case of agencies ordering things that they where they don't know what they're doing. And I want to mention one little story. When in my early teaching years, I was advisor for the yearbook in my high school, and the kids kept coming to me and saying, "How about some color here?" And I was reminded by your story, "How about some color here? And how about some here?" So I thought, gee, a lot of color really make this book look great. Well, we ended up that year $12,000 in the hole. We had to make that up the next year. And I learned in a hurry about color. It was my responsibility to get us out of debt. And so I would hope, though, that as we investigate printing, that we also keep in mind waste. I rather like the idea of some kind of a report saying that the highway department spent $5 for this book. This is what it cost to print. And so we can look at that in Ways and Means.
Well, and tell us that thing, but they could actually write the report that way, that this was a three-color book that perhaps could have been done just as well for two. This is going to take some kind of judgment, but that's what the board would be doing. we would have a bill we could get out. I'm not sure whether we could go through this and get anything out, and yet the other way, we could get something out and not have too much trouble passing it either.
Mr. Chairman, this is a, Ross Plutke did it to me.
Right.
Worked very hard, and I think the forms he established, I'm going through and annotating are just, they're really revealing when it comes to what a, how an agency works and how many copies they have left over and what their printing styles are and the whole thing. I think one of the things we ought to add is...
Well, we could add that to it.
...the lay body. Well, continuing that, one of the things I think we could help would be to, and it'd be hard to find, and that is anybody reading this material or understanding the material, which is really the essence, which is not a printing problem, it's a communication problem. But all the fine printing in the world, the pictures are used, the slick paper is used, the color is used, not necessarily for opulence, but really to try to convey a message and to get the reader to read it. There are other techniques that are much less expensive than using photograph, although that under offset printing is not that expensive, except for the color, I guess. But maybe we want on that somebody on the committee, somebody that can communicate, and I don't know where we'd be able to find that.
Well, I'm thinking, I think the best recommendation was to take somebody from legislative fiscal. I can't imagine anybody who would be closer to what you're talking about with an eye toward getting dollar for dollar value.
Well, I kind of like to go outside of government. Well, you go down to legislative fiscal and you almost have to take a dictionary to understand that they talk to each other in some sort of a jargon that I've...
Well, I agree. We could have the head of the, Glenn Cruising or somebody like this on that board specify somebody from that along with somebody from government and someone from the governor's office. You could have five or six people here. It isn't the sort of thing they'd have to meet every day. Once every 3 months would be probably adequate going over what's been printed. Certainly that could be your job in a sense. But I'm trying to think of something that we can put together and get out that will handle the problem.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you're entirely right. This, I don't think I can support the bill if it came to the floor the way it is. And we simply don't have time to, you know, rework it, take out all censorship implications and all this kind of stuff. And I think this idea is the way to go. And I think that it would get at the problem that some of our people...
Especially if it was directed toward what you're talking about, the value of these. Somebody has to make some kind of... Sometimes I feel that they're in competition with each other and that the only people that see them are those other people in state government comparing their booklet with the last guy's, and I'm going to do a better job than he did, and by that time no one else reads it, and it doesn't have anything that's relevant, or it's in the kind of jargon that you're talking about that strictly is agency jargon, and no one else understands their vocabulary.
Sad fact, though, Mr. Chairman, is that a large majority of the reports to which we find the greatest objection, we're the ones who require it. And I don't think the agencies are any more pleased about printing them than we are about getting them, which is an absolutely absurd position to be in. They don't want to print them. We don't want to, John doesn't have the time to print them. They don't want to make them. We don't want to read them, but we're cranking them out.
Right. Would it be all right with you people then if I sat down with the legislative council and explained what we wanted and see if they could print us up a couple pages? We could.
On the public side and very short. Okay.
On the agency side. Okay, fine.
But I just.
Well, I believe that he should be on it, and I believe that the printing people should be on it, the public.
Well, one answer to Commissioner Neal's concern about having one statewide elected official lording it over the others. No statewide public official is represented on the board.
Right.
We don't have that problem.
Taxpayers. Okay, we'll leave those out.
And I think one of the things that the study points out was that some of the agencies have a question about why do you put this useless piece of information out? And they would simply get the ORS out and say, look, we're required to go by law.
All right, but, that, the but then they could come to us, then we would have a report that would say that this is what we need to eliminate. Then we can get at the crux of the matter, because maybe we're not even aware that we're doing this.
I think that in the bill, and Mr. Chairman, that the publications board should be directed specifically looking at statutes that are no longer applicable to Oregon government and make recommendations for to the legislature.
Those that should be eliminated. Okay. Well, I think if that's all right, I think we're going to just have an exercise here if we continue. I don't know how you feel. Or is that all right with you?
If we have somebody from legislative fiscal, we might want to have somebody from legislative administration. The reason I say that is that it's going to all have to fit together.
Yeah.
When we come down to bill printing and,
okay,
and the whole thing, it's going to fit through primarily, I think, through legislative council and legislative administration rather than legislative fiscal.
Okay. I only wanted somebody from fiscal just because they are so tight with that money, and I have
maybe somebody from all three of them.
All three of them would be fine. All right, we'll go ahead on that direction, and if that's all right with everybody. Is there anyone else? Did you want to test
the question? Look on the yellow in our state seal, so fade it out, Joe. Have you heard that one before?
No, I haven't. Yeah, I think your state station are those next.
Except my state stationery doesn't come with the blue part.
Somebody made a comment, it's good enough for who it's for.
You know, when things are going your way, you tend to get on the top.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't make that comment.
No, I know, you wouldn't make that comment.
Well, I just wondered about the institution.
Well, I just wondered the... I
meant members of the committee and gender in general. I have not been testifying this evening. Testimony and questions, particularly the last reference of Senator Carson to the reports that the legislature requires and everybody seems to put out. You might want to take what the Justice Department's done for the last 3 years and their requirement of an annual report to be made binding report made to the legislature. You've interpreted that statute to mean merely our budget document. Is your annual report to the legislature includes our activities for the past biennium? I don't see any value in publishing something for PR purposes or plaque purposes. We made our report in full far more comprehensively than most of the brochures I've seen. That's how we solve the problem. Maybe a direction we might want to go with the myriad of other statutes that require a biennial report from the legislative assembly. Anybody's asked us for an opinion, perhaps very well serve that purpose with other agencies.
If we did ask for it, would you pay for it, or would the legislature pay for it? Just thought I'd ask.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hurd.
Have you finished?
I had some other comments. The state printer has been very, very helpful to the Justice Department with respect to cutting down the cost of putting out our opinions, cutting down all the names in our letterhead in the last 2 months to eliminate the need for constant updating and change. Also begun to explore the possibilities of having our opinions as they're prepared also reproduced on a machine-readable font for the day that we have the new printing technique available. We are just checking it out for us someplace on the East Coast. That's the thing that we're trying to look ahead to the day when we've got a better way to do the jobs.
General Gallo, there'll be a bill.
For Senator Carson's information, Jim can tell you where the yellow went.
Jim, you mentioned that there folks charge for some of your stuff now, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Are you breaking even on that?
For the most part, except we've got our courts, the Supreme Court, and libraries. We have to supply for that free as a statutory reference on some of those. We charge for the opinions both in the bound volumes. We also provide a morning and after service, which is mail out the day after the opinions are released. It goes out the same morning the legislature receives theirs. Attorneys and libraries want to keep current on a day by day basis rather than waiting for quarterly reports. As I'm not convinced we're breaking even, and we're studying in order to bring our charges up to what the actual costs are. On the printed volume, the quarterly volume, we are.
have, at hand, do you have the figures for your last, for the last report that the Attorney General sent out before you switched to using the budget document?
I don't know.
Do you have any idea what that's called?
Well, what they did was included in the hardback bound volume of the Attorney General reports. First, how many pages included in any report that we listed to. The titles of every piece of litigation that was filed, case numbers, report numbers, all of which seem to be unnecessary or irrelevant information that was available for a period of time. That information available, if somebody needs it, the filing system that we had, court records, the agency had any other information. We just tried to take a good hard look at what's required, what's the purpose for it, and then let's do that. If there's anybody that needs something else, why we have it there.
Well, I would certainly think that the budget document would accomplish it.
Well, I think there's probably far more substantive work that goes into a budget document, or at least we hope so. There is a few more.
How many copies, how long have you been doing that? Just since Lee's been in office?
That's correct.
How many copies of the budget reports have you distributed?
It's distributed to no one other than the governor's office and legislative officials. It's available if somebody wants to look at it, but in response to Senator Carson's question about who wants to really read it, we have nobody beating at their doors to get a hold of it.
Well, if it's a private citizen, I'd say I wanted a copy, how much would it cost me?
Well, it would be really a reproduction cost. That we don't make up any extra copies for that kind of a situation. But it's a thick document.
So then, the beauty of this is that you don't have, like in your supplier, you don't have a big stack of them, just order.
Our fiscal officer has our file copies on it. The governor's office has their copy. The legislature has copies.
And then you just make them up as they're ordered.
And we've had no orders, to my knowledge.
And no requests.
And no requests.
That's interesting.
Further questions, Jim?
Well, one thing I would like to say, I commented earlier, I think that the Attorney General should be complimented for he really made a breakthrough on getting away from the whatever standard book there is and has gone to a more functional 8.5 by 11. It does have some serious repercussions on libraries throughout the state, but I think when you talk about economy and speed, getting it out, the whole thing, it's a real change. In fact, it's the forerunner. John and I and others have talked about doing it for the session laws and a variety of other things because it provides it's non-traditional. It doesn't fit our mold, but it sure is cheaper and gets it out quicker, which are two of our real problems. So I think Attorney General has done a good job in this area.
Senator, questions? Thank you, John.
I wondered if there was anybody else who'd come possibly testify.
I don't know. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? If not, we'll close hearing on 871. And we have 2157, which has passed the House. It's here for the Senate to look over. And seeing as the Senate did not have anything to do with the drawing of this bill, 2157, which has to do with...
It's in gross form. Fred,
gross
take,
form.
Take this one, the one...
It's in your file.
It should be in your file.
The book one is old.
And, Jim, you were mostly responsible for this. Would you like to...
Defend yourself
a small amount on this?
I wasn't really prepared for any testimony on this evening. I can summarize the version of the Gross House Bill 2157 is passed through the House. To our knowledge, there was no opposition to anything contained in the bill. The very Newspaper Publishers Association, the Broadcasters Association, the legislative committees were satisfied with it. Common Cause was satisfied with it. The ACLU was satisfied and incorporated some of their suggestions, many of which were very, very good. To my knowledge, the agencies that we surveyed, prepared to testify before the House Committee, their concerns were all incorporated in 2157, and also made those judgments. And to my knowledge, there are no areas of controversy other than the
Have you got the mail up there today on this?
Raised this evening.
No, it isn't in my files.
Concern that has any substantive problem with this one that we had not heard, before this evening. I would look at the bill since the House completed work on it. I'd have to go back and check it, but it certainly seemed to be that the work of an administrative agency at the administrative hearing level would certainly be something that would be interpreted as being pertaining to litigation or that litigation was recently.
Excuse me, just one more. I thought that the mail was here. Evidently, we have a little problem now that our lovely secretary went down to be the secretary for another committee, and we're running back and forth. We have another girl that works part-time with us, or every day, even half a day, or something like that. Anyway, we did have several pieces of correspondence on this, and they're not here. One of them we do have is from the Bureau of Labor, but we also have one from the unemployment. I know that one there, and there's somebody else's. I would like to refer, without having those here now, but I would like to refer to page 8 and ask you a question. When we get down to line 18, it says, any public records or information, the disclosure of which is prohibited by federal law or regulations, so you take care of those. But on the state one, you have gone through and listed these. Now, what do we do about ones that you might have missed? Have you any place picked this up where there's still, I mean, you've gone down specifically. You remember we discussed this one time, the first time we heard this. And I'm still kind of concerned about this. If we did forget one, and that by law is private.
Yeah, I believe we're looking then to page 8, subsection 3, mm-hmm. the bottom of the page, in subsection 4, where the governor is given the same authority following an administrative hearing to make a temporary exemption to the next session of the legislature. The same type of arrangement that was made with the Administrative Procedures Act last session.
In other words, to answer Jack's question, if you have, in fact, missed somebody, they can perfectly run to the governor, and if they can make their case to the governor, they can have a finding that they're temporarily included in the exemption, which protects their record.
Only after a public hearing. Findings of fact and recommendations normally by our office, and the governor would then make the decision. That decision is effective only until the next session of the legislature.
I forget, and I did not go through, and I'm sorry to have to say this, that I had not gone through this carefully. What did we do about office conferences such as the governor might have? Are these all open to?
Well, that's the open meeting question.
No, but the records that might be kept.
You're talking about the interoffice memorandum.
Well, I'm speaking about groups that might come up to talk to him confidentially, and minutes are kept, things like this, that you have a delegation from Timbuktu that come down here.
Yeah, sorry, John left. Here's pages 14 and 15.
That's the part that we're going to amend out. We'll amend out or add to right there. I just wondered if not, we'll go through it anyway in more detail ourselves and then see, but...
I'm looking for the amendment of 44840, which is the...
Section 13 was the 44040.
Right.
Same position, well, we've changed some of those, I suppose we, those come, move in, they move in there, don't they?
Oh, man, this will wind up in judiciary with 2101 and all those, remember the whole...
Yeah, you've got them all over there yet, haven't you?
Well, I'm not in judiciary, but they're all over there, yeah, they're nesting.
Which ones, Wally?
The one on confidentiality.
This is confidentiality, the whole thing is in here.
They all came down the floor one after another and they all conflicted.
Why is that included in here?
Well, I think it's lines, page 10, lines 9 through 11, are the questions you ask, the public officer should not be examined as to, and you, the bill deletes communications made to him in official confidence.
This was the big loophole in the existing law that changed. Then making specific reference to those public records exempt from disclosure under this act. So if the record is not specifically exempt, under section 11, it's not exempt. I'm looking for the specific general language.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Jim, what about private correspondence?
Okay, I think that this type of material is covered in subsection 2 on page 7, beginning on line 18. Communications with any public body or between public body of an advisory nature, to the extent they cover other than purely factual materials and are preliminary to any final agency determination. There's the to encourage the free and open discussion, review of materials. We then go on to state the reason for it. This exemption shall not apply unless the public body shows in particular instances the public interest in encouraging frank communication between officials, employees, and public bodies fairly outweighs the public interest in disclosure. So there is no blanket exemption of that type of communication. And you have to be able to demonstrate that the reason for withholding it outweighs the reason for disclosure.
What about as a legislator? Now I have three filing cabinets full of letters, probably too many for my first two terms in the House. Some of those letters would probably be interesting reading, but would be disastrous for individuals who wrote to me in some cases if they, you know, somebody walked up my doorstep and they had said,
if it should be found that withholding that fairly outweighs the fishing expedition type of material, fine. I think perhaps the practical question becomes what's going to be asked for. Let me look in your file and see if that might be able to find. And that's just, it's not acceptable.
Now, where does that say that?
Well, I think it comes down to these.
I looked on page 7B, you have personal, medical, or similar file, but it says only if it would. If the disclosure thereof would constitute an unreasonable invasion of privacy, unless the public interest by clear and convincing evidence requires disclosure in a particular instance. But how would you know that unless you went through the file?
Well, that's the point. In other words, what we have done is substitute a perhaps imprecise test, but a very flexible test, of the greatest public interest. The old game has been replaced by a balancing interest test. And that puts us in a hot seat in trying to balance that, or eventually the courts that should
But in the meantime, would I have to open this up if somebody said, I want to find out if there is something?
That question is then up to you. Are you going to withhold it or not withhold it? Unless it's damaging, does it really make any difference, or unless it's going to damage somebody else? And I don't think that question would go beyond this. If for some reason the information requested could be the basis for some kind of public criticism or suggest additional public inquiry, there may be some hesitation that's been perhaps our experience that we've seen with state agencies had no problem with legislators. That would ever be the case. The agency would withhold something because they didn't want the press generally asking quite often a member of the public trying to get some information from the agency that would come back complaining to us about not being able to get it or being given a runaround. If the agency does not give them the information they've requested, they have the right to appeal that decision to the agency. To us, we then review the material and have to make a decision either that it should be disclosed or it should not be disclosed. That decision is then subject to court review, immediately to court appeals. And we're wrong and greatly embarrassed if we decide something should be withheld, the court finds the public interest dictates be revealed. And, it's a balancing test, and I appreciate your concern because it's not precise. But the minute you begin to get precise, you've got all kinds of loopholes, narrow definitions that create problems. The thing is designed to encourage the free availability of information. Only in these listed circumstances, and then only if the public interest justifies it, is an agency authorized to approve giving them.
But I'm thinking about, like he is, about the individual. If somebody comes and says, I want to go look at your files, and I say, well, go take a jump in the lake. I've got all sorts of things in there, letters from my mother and my aunt and my uncle and my girlfriend, if I had one, and this sort of thing, which would be nobody's business, but it's all there. Then I have to go to court and prove that, have somebody finally go through it to prove that what parts that aren't anybody's business.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are letters that we've all received in the years we've been in the legislature that, for one reason or another, would be either embarrassing to the individual that wrote them if they were disclosed, or, you know, that could very well pertain to state business.
So servants who write with a problem?
I was thinking about a few weeks ago, Representative Green gave her letters and so on to a college in the state under the stipulation that they would be open for so many years and all this. Well, I've got letters that I would hate if anybody was alive that was expected from the contents of the letter. Is there?
You couldn't do that under Oregon law. She couldn't do that anymore.
I would like this spelled out. I really would. It pertains to the kind of mail we're talking about.
Okay. We then go down, again, page 7, section 2, skipping over the information of personal nature, subsection C, which is information submitted to a public body in confidence and not otherwise required by law to be submitted, where such information would reasonably be considered confidential. Public body has obligated itself in good faith not to disclose the information, and the public interest was suffered by a disclosure. This is the kind of information legislature receives from every other public official.
And we are a public body, individual.
But Jim, now, can I, as a senator, can I make that sole determination?
It's subject to review by the courts.
That's it.
Well, but that's the purpose. If, in fact, these requirements are met, that decision is something that, of course, all of you will decide if somebody decides to take you on.
Could I stop a fishing expedition?
Sure. And refuse to give me information.
All right, then, but for him to have his fishing, then he can just go to court and say, I've got to open it, and then he can start fishing.
Not necessarily. I think he's going to have to demonstrate the way he
what he needs or what he's after?
Right.
What is
I guess technically it is. The question has come up with respect to some of the work we do, particularly here in the legislative session, when we've been requested for opinions on material or on a question, and asked that the fact that the question has been asked be kept in confidence. One legislator not letting somebody else even jump in because he's got an idea that he wants to get some guidance on. We honored that request. But with this caveat, that once the opinion is prepared and is delivered to the requester, it's then public information and we provide copies to the press to be as we always do. We've had no problem with that. We've had to explain the system every now and then because we're not in the same position as typical lawyer in private practice is as far as lawyer-client privilege. But the work in progress we have on our legislators. Because of political implications, somebody being in punch.
But that's your policy.
That's a policy.
And if you wanted to change it, if I wrote and asked you to keep something in confidence, you could go right ahead and announce it.
I don't think we would. We could.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I think we would then be in a position where you, as a member of the public, even the UPS state agency, is using our services and requested that the information it provides be kept in confidence. Work is
completed. And as far as if I, my letter that I sent to you, technically you believe that that is your letter after I send it to you.
It's in our possession. If we're talking about who owns the piece of paper, it's in our possession. I guess it's an academic question. Who has the property rights to the piece of paper?
But it could be very important.
I don't see how it could be.
Well, it could be if somebody decided, if they read this law and passed it, and decided that we want to go through Senator Ripper's file.
In that sense, it would be a document that probably available in the national. How many opinions has Senator Ripper requested requiring?
About now we're talking about the mail that he's receiving constituents.
That would be based on that particular letter. I don't see that you have any real problem with your files on information you have supplied you by constituents or others involved in the problem that you as a legislator are working on if it's submitted in confidence. And if, of course, you find that the reason for disclosing it outweighs the reasons for keeping it in confidence.
Well, the files of the governor.
Be the same situation.
You don't see any difference between, say, a letter that one of us be directly elected, like the governor, the attorney general, or a member of the legislature. There'd be any difference between the letter that we would receive and one that, say, welfare agencies would receive. You don't see any difference in the two.
In view of what's happening in Washington, do you see this as a personal? It applies to the attorney general. Executive privilege statute that's presently on the books is one of the things, big loop that we're trying to close down, provide that balancing of interests. There may be circumstances where the exemption is provided here. We dictate that the public have available to them that particular document. It's more important the public have that information available than it is to protect the original confidence. Suggest that probably there are circumstances in Washington. If we had this kind of a bill, I don't think this would be perhaps ready on the spots that were perhaps that would have
been. Providing they hadn't gone through the shredder already. Fine. Are there further questions? We do have somebody else that wanted to testify. Was there anyone else but now that wanted to testify on this too? So we can find out. Okay. Well, he wrote Mike Papadopoulos.
Papadopoulos.
Papadopoulos. That's what it is. It is popping.
Probably the foremost expert in breaking the system's public records.
I was going to say, maybe what his interest in this, not,
Oh, all right.
I mean, his husband's interested in that, didn't I?
Oh, well, I'm sure that's true.
But in any case, I've been very, very closely connected with, court decisions which affected 44040E. And so I've been watching this, the progress of this legislation, the need of mine, and I've been to the title of it, has it, I'm going to see if the Attorney General's office has been taking the proposals in the sense that it passed. But I still have some comments to make. With regard to some of these exemptions. Oh, first of all, I have a small question about grammar. Section 2, page 2, line 26. I don't understand the word photographing. I don't believe that belongs in the dictionary. I should suggest that you turn it into basic American. Maybe by restructuring the sentences, no, the idea of graphic, the word is wrong.
Maybe we just coined a new word. I don't know.
Maybe that's your privilege.
By statute, we created it.
Photographing, you mean?
Okay.
Okay.
Now we come to section 11, and we see throughout the clear intent that the exemption shall be carried out, section 11.1. Unless a public interest requires disclosure in a particular instance, and so we have a list of exempt types of record, and we look at the procedure, and we find that a person who wishes to inspect certain documents goes to an agency to have a look, and is told by the agency that the documents concerned belong to one of these classes A through G of section 11.1. Then he believes otherwise, he goes to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General calls on the agency to sustain its action. And all the agency has to do is to say that the records involved in this context are defined in sections A through G, and that's it. There is nobody there before the Attorney General to speak to the public. Here we have a criterion which says, following records are exempt unless the public interest requires disclosure in a particular instance. I don't think the agency is capable of speaking to the public interest, and I'm not sure about the Attorney General. Maybe this one, maybe not the next one, maybe not the last one. But there is nobody there, and so there is a little weakness in that definition. Now, that means that, as it's been said at the moment, the person who really thinks that he has a right to seek any one of documents fitting the definition of A through G, 11 sub 1, is going to have to go to court. I'm presuming that the class of documents is very well defined. In those classes, he's going to have to go to court. And that is the first point where the member of the public who seeks information is going to be able to stand up and say, I believe the public interest is best by disclosure. So the addition which the Attorney General has put in of having an administrator, an executive officer, look at the question and look at it from the point of view of helping the public along, with the point of view of saving the public's time and money, this is an area where the public's time and money is not going to be saved, I believe. Maybe this is just...
Well, who would you substitute,
I don't have
Mike,
any idea,
for the Attorney General?
I'm just saying that this is a weakness. It might be that your ombudsman, or your some public defender, or some other person, who is... maybe this is a new job you have to create. I must suggest you do that right now. This is a thing to look for the future. Who's going to defend the public? How does the public defend itself?
And you're still going to come down to a individual.
You're going to come down to a individual.
And that person is subject to, you know, as you said, some are going to be good, some are bad, maybe yesterday, tomorrow, or the next day, but always you have to come to the one, and why not the Attorney General? A man who is perhaps best versed in the law and should have the public's best interest at heart.
Well, he's close to the executive of the Republic, I see.
Maybe one can see the role of public defender in criminal cases as being more and more the kind of thing I'd like to see. I'm not that versed in the role of public defender, I don't think he does his job well. But at least he appears to be working on the side of a member of the public who, for the time being, is being accused of criminal actions.
Because I've seen public defenders that are pretty ambitious that not necessarily have the interest of their client best at heart, except that this is a chance to get a big name by going to the Supreme Court or something.
I agree. Well, I mean, I'm seeing this as a weakness, and I was going to have the committee spend an awful lot of time with that.
Well, what I'm saying is that if the Attorney General, then who? And I haven't heard, you know, anybody put up who's going to be more responsible, a statewide elected official that the public would know good and bad about, or should, at least under our system you're supposed to, and you do have somebody representing the law part of our state, and if we are in a state of, I don't know if I'm putting this right, but we are a society who believes that law is the way to go, and we answer by this. This should be the leading individual for this to say that we want to uphold the public's will. And we're a society that believes in law. We don't believe in policemen on the corner, so, or army on the corner. So I would think that he would still be the best man for this to make that decision.
Well,
That's a personal opinion. Yes. Other guys, maybe you have one that's different.
No, I find myself in the same position Mike's in, that this is a soft spot, but you run into problems when you try to start to dredge up somebody to fill that in. It'd be nice if they could go to some arbiter, but boy, the minute you put that in, then you've got a sub-court appeals opinion, and one of the problems that Mike ran into is getting an answer. We've got to make the system work very quickly so that you get an opportunity to be heard and then can get the court system.
I'm in the position of saying that I think that the present law together with the present court opinions may very well be better than what's coming in here. The present law, has a pretty broad public record definition and pretty broad right of inspection, so that the only documents which may not be inspected are those which are specifically exempted by statute. And so that at the present time, the ones which are exempted by statute are in fact those listed under Section 8 on page 8. And there is an attempt, and this is where I come in, to claim that those documents which come under the class of communications made to a public officer in official confidence when the public interest and suffer by the disclosure. Those were to be exempt. That has been the attempt by an agency to maintain that such documents were exempt from inspection. And the court came down with the strong presumption that the agency would have the burden, both of saying that there was the confidentiality, and of saying that the public interest would suffer by this time. Now, anything which weakens that position, or which appears to weaken that position, I say is going to be a backward step. And so when I come to what I really want to testify about was the replacement for that section, which is 2C, bottom of page 7. Now, still see loopholes for the agencies, quite large loopholes. Unless you tighten that one up. As it reads now, information submitted to a public body in confidence and not otherwise required by law to be submitted. Where such information should reasonably be considered confidential and the public body has obliged itself in good faith not to disclose, and when the public interest would suffer by disclosure. I turn this round. I bear in mind that what is really ought to be protected and is the informant privilege. I'm thinking of criminal situations where a certain amount of law enforcement would not be carried out unless a person knowing something about activities could come out with information and be sure of protection against retaliation.
Well, Mike, doesn't that do that?
And I say, all right, so we have an order in which this is done. Information and not opinion, first of all.
Well, now suppose that that you worked for a large lumber company and you knew that they were doing some illegal polluting of some sort, and you were a fairly responsible individual, but you, in that concern, but you got uptight about this, and you wrote a letter. You knew if you come up to Salem, somebody would put two and two together. So you write a letter to Environmental Quality and tell them all about it. Now, wouldn't that fall into the line of competence?
Okay, now, first.
Isn't that what this covers?
First step. The person writing asks for confidentiality, maybe verification, but asks for confidentiality. Then the agency has to decide whether it has the power to maintain that confidentiality or not. And that has to be a gift to community. At the present time, the legislature has not given the agency the power of confidentiality, except with regard to specific instances, you know, hospital records and police and so forth and so on. And I take a brand new agency that's just been created, I don't know, maybe Environmental Control, and I regard their business as not necessarily generally being of a classifiable nature, because everything they do should be out in the open.
Well, if I wrote the letter, though, and said, hey, you look over here at what they're dumping out there in that, this is a thing going out in the ocean, we'll say, and there, this is supposed to be so-and-so, but it's going out raw, or last Thursday night, they dumped 3,000 gallons of pure acid out there. If I write that letter, I won't be there the next day if anybody sees that letter.
Okay, I'm still trying to get an order into this. I have an alternative model, you see, where an agency goes on maybe on a fishing expedition for information against an individual. I see a distinction between a fishing expedition against an individual and a fishing expedition for public good. But the agency which goes on a fishing expedition against individuals says anybody who knows anything against this person, President Nixon, who writes to us, will have his communications protected. Is that right or is that wrong? The other one is the agency which says anybody giving information leading to conviction of polluters. So that's probably okay. You can determine the public interest there. But, you know, there's a whole lot of shades. But what I want to avoid is a gift from this legislature to an agency in general to offer confidentiality just because it claims that there is a public interest in confidentiality.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if you're, I think you've got a point, but I wonder if you're going at it in a way that possibly will cut back the public's rights to know.
Well, I mean, I came in here with a firm belief that the laws in the region of the court decisions in the region.
It is right now.
Yes. And I suppose I'm being fearful of the possibility that the creation of a new language brings with it new loopholes. Loopholes which might not exist. It would be good from my point of view to have this legislature say clearly that we don't want to create confidentiality unless the public interest would not be harmed by the creation of
the
public.
Did you testify before the House Committee?
Oh, yes.
Just for the sake of it.
No, because there are other points. I testified about calling this an informal privilege. I didn't say that. I said that is worth preserving, but not the language of the House. This particular section is in any case checked. And I didn't testify against that section. And it did change. This is the language that we came from civil liberties. But you see what I'm looking at, the public body obliging itself in good faith not to disclose information. Does it do that first or does it do that through its being asked? it's okay for somebody to write to you and ask you to keep it quiet. I think it's okay for an individual to write to the police chief and say such and such a criminal act or an act has been committed and ask for an investigation and ask that his name be kept quiet. Those are areas where those are already established, either by statute or by common law. I don't like you to be giving the gift of confidentiality to any or every executive officer who might say, okay, there's some information you can give me and I will offer you confidentiality if you give it to me, whether you've demanded it or not. A case that I was involved with was a situation where the confidentiality was offered first and consultants who offered opinions, not facts, opinions. Only one of those persons demanded confidentiality of that person who was personally related to the person and people being examined. He demanded confidentiality, and even that wasn't protected by the court.
I suppose you have a double question here.
Yeah.
Somewhat like the newspaper, you offer confidentiality to the informant of the newspaper, and yet you might say then we're not going to offer confidentiality to the informant of government when it might be in the public's best interest for that man to remain unknown if he is going to disclose something that is against the public's will.
Mr. Chair, we are going to have another hearing on this. We are going to have another hearing.
Well, no, we'll probably no more hearing. We'll probably go to work session on it. All right, can we move on to your next point, Mike?
I think that was basically the total of my interest tonight, except in the same subsection, is there a distinction that's worth making between information and opinion? Information in terms meaning hard facts, opinion meaning gossip, meaning guesswork, meaning something much higher, maybe worth it. You might say, it might be worthwhile to discourage. It might lead to greater integrity in the giving of information. But throughout the whole lot, again, here is the section is placing a burden on the public to protect its interests, or the member of the public, to protect the public's interest in open records. The agency seems to still have a lot of power to declare things confidential and to rely on not understand directly from the people, from the public, from the legislature, that it should be operating out from this. That's what I want to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Other further question? Let's see, John, you wanted to testify now.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Gustafson, representing the Labor Commissioner. This is a tough and interesting and important area, and I frankly do not seem to feel totally qualified or even very well qualified to deal with it, but the people who really should be talking about it were not able to be here tonight. So what I'd like to do is to point out what the amendments are that have been submitted by the Labor Commissioner, and then as best I can use an example of what our problem is, maybe that will explain to you what I'll show you what our difficulties are. The amendments that have been proposed on line 12 of page 6 would insert after the word litigation, litigation in courts or before administrative agencies. Basically, that's under the conclusion that an administrative agency is really a quasi-judicial operation and that there should be a legitimate intention there. The reason for number 13, or on line 13, after the word party, adding "or is involved." The reason for that addition is that technically, so I understand from attorneys, that an agency is not really a party in an administrative law hearing. Very frequently is a party, but is frequently involved. And this would help out to put in that language "or is involved." And then down on line 27, after the word information of a law enforcement agency for the purposes of carrying out any duty or responsibility that is required by law. As an administrative agency, we go through a process of investigating cases, and then after the investigation, there'll be an administrative decision that is made, let's say in a discrimination case, a decision about discrimination, or perhaps in the case of granting of a license, a decision on whether or not that license should or should not be granted. Or there may be a preferring of charges. But our concern is that during that investigation stage that the information that's been gathered by the agency not be required to be made public. It was my initial feeling when I reviewed the bill, that there was no problem here because, in fact, there was an exemption for elected officials. Upon having other people review it, they did discover that there were other areas that could create problems. For example, today I was involved with a deposition that we were taking on an employment agency matter that lasted for a long time. There was information that came out, incidentally, this was part of the investigative process, trying to develop information. There was information that came out during that time that we had that the other side would have been very interested in having, in fact, asked us for. Now, no administrative decision had been made, and it would be a matter of public record if an administrative decision were made based on that information that we had. But what we would see happening under this law as it's currently written would be that the individual or his attorneys, the attorneys representing the other side or representing the individual whose license might be in question, could request to go to court immediately and have our information that had been developed by investigators become public. Now the result of that would be, if that is true and true the case, it would mean that we could not really make a decision because the information would have been exposed prior to the time that any conclusion was drawn, or we would have been exposing our case if the decision would be made to deny the license or deny the decision of discrimination. So anyway, what we run into is the whole problem that's described in the letter, that we believe any agency which has law enforcement's duty should be able to keep its investigative information confidential. Otherwise, we see ourselves facing the prospect of respondents on our doorstep seeking our records on the case, and we would have no reciprocal right to their file. Therefore, we believe that all enforcement agencies' records should be exempt during that investigative stage, and the amendments that were submitted really aim to do that. I think I'll pause there to see if there are any questions.
All right, we have two attorneys here. We'll let Senator Carson.
Well, John, the gamesmanship that really typifies the former litigatory process still has its aspects in civil law, but in government law, at least maybe Jim will disagree with me, I see a real trend on discovery and on public law, the old end of the idea that the ambush theory of public law, it's still some in tort law and some other area, but criminal law particularly, the idea that the district attorney's investigatory file is his and only his is dwindling. It's not gone yet, but I'd say a strong move, either by statute or by policy, for the public lawyer to say, this is what I've got, and open it up, and take it from there. You don't see, apparently, there's no sign of change in your aspect, in your department's aspect, or is there?
Well, let me try to, as best I can, give two examples. In civil rights cases, if we go through the initial investigation and the situation where someone says, no, wait, we want to see what you've got. That happens. I've had legislators ask me during this session, Well, you know, we want to see what you've got in this case. If we end up in that kind of situation, we're really, prior to time of decisions, we really maturely affect not only the decision, but also whether or not the rights of the complaining party are protected. In addition, we may be making it possible for the respondent to change the records or change or develop witnesses, which will essentially, if a decision of discrimination is taken, which will essentially, at the hearing, give them an opportunity to take on the case and win it.
I think you do answer it. Hasn't been much of a change.
Well,
in this area.
I don't know what was going on before at Senator Carson. I'll give you another example. Today, this is not something that's typical, but today, in this deposition, we have information from the state of California indicating criminal backgrounds, indicating financial backgrounds of an individual, and also it was brought up in the hearing that there were accusations about the possible tie-ins with organized crime, right? Okay. The individual involved, his counsel, requested that. They wanted to know, where'd you get that information? And the response was, if we make a decision that is based materially upon the information that we are discussing here, you will have that information. But at this point, that is not public information. That was not his answer. That was the essence of what I think the essence of what boiled down to. Now, what would have happened in these cases? They want to know, well, who said that I got a $12,000 or that so and so got a $12,000 loan from so and so last fall? We'd like to know that. They want to know that. Well, we were not in a position to say. The response was, if that was information we had, we were interested in replying to the question.
I understand that, and it's not an easy question, and I don't expect an answer, but. The bad analogy is that the public is now demanding to look over the public servant's shoulder at his cards when he's playing them. For two reasons. One, to make sure he's playing all these cards and not playing favorites getting finessed all the time. The other is that there is a subtle change in law, I perceive, and it's slow to come, and that is that the ambush theory of good litigation, which I grant you is exciting, and Perry Mason does it all the time, is leaving. I'm not unsympathetic to what you're saying, but our district attorneys are finding, and our chiefs of police, dragging and screaming all the way, are finding that the idea of where the public looks over the shoulder, and here's what the police, after their initial inquiry is completed, which has to do with the hot leads and getting statements and confessions and depositions, the whole thing. But once they start the procedure of taking after a citizen, then there seems to be, in my view, a change. And I just wonder, I have no fixed notion, but it I can draw an analogy when the legislature is zeroing in and we're debating openly some discussions. The timing would be critical, not to share our knowledge with the newspaper. For timing. Yeah. And we'll say ultimately we'll tell you. They don't stand for that. But where'd you get that information? I wonder maybe we're about ready throughout state government to move into that.
Well, another part of the answer to the question, I guess, is what the output is of what we do and what effect that has on the public, on the citizen, and do we end up really following through on the ambush, I think.
And
I think really what the record will show is that well over 95% of our cases are conciliated in civil rights cases where discrimination is found. When we go to a hearing, that there are numerous kinds of protections that occur at that hearing process in terms of who determines the facts and whether or not an order is issued, and then a subsequent potential legal appeal from that. So the likelihood of the ambush being, well, number one, the ambush doesn't take place. Maybe it has sometimes, but certainly doesn't take place very frequently. And number two, if it does take place, the regular process has protections built into it for appeal, which give pretty good protection. In this other area, frankly, I think we're moving into something we've never seen before in this in the public employment agency or private employment agency. just something Oregon hadn't seen before. And so I suppose it isn't a matter of ambushing, it's a matter that we're trying to get down and make sure that we do our job to protect the public the way we really should, the way the commissioners accountable.
Well, I do see a clear distinction between interrupting your investigatory process, which I think is extremely important, the work product, if you will, when you're developing it. The minute you go public and lay the accusation at the foot of some citizen, and then start playing your cards close and not telling him or anybody else what you got, that's the part that I think is dwindling. The ability to make an investigation before you ask to share, that'll be some time before that disappears.
Well, that's the portion of the amendments that have been proposed here, Randy, but I do, number one, I'd like to say that to show there's some harmony here, we on the previous testimony by the Attorney General's office relating to past bill, whether or not it's good to put the budget together, the biennial report's a great idea. And Labor Commissioner, the Labor Commissioner's office, I'm sure, endorsed the Attorney General's.
Well, gosh, you can agree on something. Boy, that's a first. Get that on tape.
We got it on tape.
And,
shucks, it just went out.
The IRA just chimed in. They're going to agree. That's too much. My own body can't take that. Not in one night.
On this legislation, I do apologize for the fact that we did not get information previously to the people we should have on this. We really thought it was okay. I, as an attorney, looking through it, saying, look at these elected officials exempted out of this thing. Everything's fine. But it turned out it wasn't fine, and we did send a letter on the House side, which was not included, unfortunately, was not included and submitted the way that we thought it was going to be. And so here we are here, we're going to be apologizing.
Any further questions? Thank you, John. Anyone else to testify on 2157? Would you like to?
Mr. Chairman.
God, who are you representing tonight?
Member of the committee. My name is Ted Hughes, representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, commercial radio and television stations.
Right.
I wasn't going to testify.
Well, then why are you?
All I want to do is visit with you in a pragmatic political way.
Now you got
and that way is to agree with Mr.
You really better. You've been around the legislature too long to get up. I wasn't going to.
And to say that to amend HB 2157, speaking pragmatically, would be probably killed. And.
Would you mind sharing your? You shared your conclusion. Would you mind sharing the? The reasoning that went into your conclusion.
I can't. It's just an instinct, you know. We in the political business have instincts. I think it might be a giant step in that direction. I'm not ready to say that it would be dead if you didn't. And there are some genuine concerns. It may not be even a good bill. But nevertheless, it's a step in the right direction, we think, in public disclosure. It's a tiny step. If there's any bugs in it, those bugs will come forth in 18 months, I'm sure. The Department of Labor can't live with it.
After this morning, they'll come forth in 8 months.
By one vote, I might.
They can't live with it. We'll be happy to come in and work out their problems. And Mr. Papadopoulos also.
Papadopoulos.
That's all I had to say. I haven't had dinner yet.
That's my
question.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
One of the things that concerns me, Ted, is that I realize the sincerity in which you bring your message, but I'm really terribly concerned. There's a new technique coming out. It used to be on the floor. You'd raise constitutional questions. You worry about fiscal implications, or you'd wring your hands about the little pieces. A new technique is developing, starting primarily with Senate Bill 100, but now it's used in Senate Bill 80, and now I find, and that's where one body works out a bill, and then it's brought to the other end of the bicameral legislature with the admonition, ominous admonition, don't touch a hair on the chinny chin chin, or the whole thing's dead.
Senator, I haven't heard that before. I've never used it ever.
No, no, you haven't. No, I...
Before any other committees.
It's a developing...
Well, we have heard it. I have an agreement with this.
Boy, I tell you, what it's really saying to me is, so be it. You know, fairly well.
It's part of the process.
2177.
If it's a bad bill, it's a bad bill regardless.
Well, I'm surprised, frankly, and I don't mean to jump on you, but I'm surprised a man... You've got a lot of experience, and I realize you're an advocate for a client here this evening, but really, that, and you don't mean it that way, and I shouldn't even address it to you, because I know you well enough to know you don't mean it that way, but that really has kind of, to me, kind of desperate overtones. And if you were the first one, I wouldn't bring it up, but I've heard it from my colleagues on the House side, and we've jammed it down the House side on Senate Bill 100.
Yeah.
Don't touch it. Boy, those, as far as I'm concerned, those days are over yet, and I just, I'm concerned that, I appreciate your admonition, because I hope the bill doesn't die. It's a good bill. It may need some tightening here and there, but,
and well, what I want to say is, we agree with the concept, and there's kind of questions about this, and I would, I don't know how many, what percentage of bills pass this legislature that don't have those.
Well, let's see, there was one back.
No, I accept your admonishment in good faith.
Yeah, it's certainly not intended to be used.
I shall never use that again.
Well, I'm sorry, on an empty stomach, that's a terrible thing to do, guy. Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
We have one more back here. Once
I'll have to testify another sentence. My name is Roger Williams, Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. The only comment that I would make is that with each exemption which is included in the bill, the opinion of newspapers becomes probably less effective. The result of any amendment that is added now would be taken, that the members would take a very serious look at the effectivity.
But if the bill was passed, it you still have 100% more than you've had before.
Well, I'm kind of afraid to make a statement, because when we withdrew our support of SB 15 and went through this one of that, so I'm kind of reluctant to say too much this evening. But we are, we do feel as an association, as I'm sure all media feel, that every record that can possibly be opened should be opened. I think members of this committee feel the same way. Work any hardships and agencies, but if you amend, then it applies to all. The investigatory amendment, which we heard this evening, would not apply, I would assume, only to the Bureau of Labor, but to the Health Department and to all agencies. And where do you call a halt?
Well, you have that delicate balance, as you people talk about, the public's right to know, and where is the public's best interest, you know, and
Jack,
that's the part we're trying to decide.
We're a minority of the committee. We could go into closed session to sign it.
But, of course, that's the overriding influence on all of us, with all of us, is to what is the public's right to know in its public's business, and where is the point where you... where it's in the best interest not to know, same as you say in the newspaper business. And thank you. I didn't mean to run you off.
All right.
Is there anyone else? No. Before we... Okay, Mike, you may now speak again, but I'm going to give you fair warning. You've got 2 minutes. We're ready to go home. It's 10 o'clock, and we're going to leave here at 10.
For the record, I'm not sure that the last speaker but one was right in agreeing with what that said. I didn't understand that. I said what you thought that said. I didn't say that amendment would be bad. I did say that a matter of amendment to that section dealing with confidentiality, which the confidence. I did also say that it suggests that if the bill had died, we would be in very good shape because of the existing court decision. And I would like to close by reading what the Oregon Court said in the main decision in this business in 1960, in regards to policy. Very strong statement, which appears on the court record. And the strong statement said this: writings coming into the hands of public officers in connection with their official functions should generally be accessible to members of the public so that there will be an opportunity to determine whether those who have been entrusted with the affairs of government are honestly, faithfully, and competently performing their functions as public servants. I suggest that if you have that as a touchstone for everything that you do in this committee with regard to this bill, it would be tremendous. Anything that doesn't meet this standard is going to be a backward step.
Whose was that like?
Whose?
Yeah.
O'Connell decision, case McEwen v. Holm, late 1961. Do you want the reference?
No, that's right.
Okay. There was one other interesting thought with regard to internal communications within agencies. I think we're here. The idea that you should protect internal communications more than final communications was not analyzed terribly deeply, but it was analyzed to some extent, because it was described as possibly providing a device by which a public official could hinder a citizen's legitimate attempt to obtain writings which are clearly within the definition of public record. This is dealing with the idea that an executive of a department might say, this document is an internal communication, it's an inter-agency communication. You don't get to see it because it's not a final communication. And the court was recognizing the evil nature of administrators.
Of course, you know, there's one beautiful part about this bill that has something to do with the first bill that we heard, is that most public employees are going to be afraid to put anything on paper, and there's going to be a lot more telephoning, and the cost of government is going to go down tremendously.
Those are the hand signals to brush off, steal, save.